Vanchakalpaturubhyascha kripasindhubhayebhyascha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. In chapter 16, which we completed yesterday, the Vandis, or the professional glorifiers, that was their service, to glorify people. That's actually a very nice service. But in today's world, professional criticizers will get more business. During the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, once a year they would hold a meeting in Sridham Mayapur of the Vishwa Vaishnava Raj Sabha, which means the Society of Devotees. And what would they would only do one thing. Not one thing, there was a few things they would do. They would award titles of distinction, like Vidya Bhusan or Seva Ratna, or titles, or Bhakti Shastri, titles that glorify a devotees who worked very hard and did things during the year. They would award titles, and then they would glorify those devotees who had passed from this world during the year. They would speak about their glories and their personality. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would call on different devotees to glorify other devotees. And in this way, for several days, the devotees would speak about each other, glorifying each other. And then when that was done, they would just end the meeting and go back. It's actually a very nice system to glorify the devotees. So these Vandis, or those who they spoke very, very sweetly, and sometimes they could even compose verses and things glorifying someone. And based on what was told to them by the great sages, they glorified Prithu Maharaj for the achievements that he would soon reveal, his wonderful activities, the activities that he would soon reveal within this world. And some of those activities, he would, as the king, he would look upon all the citizens as his children, and he would smile upon them. He was strict in one sense, but in another sense he was tolerant, like the earth. The earth is so tolerant. So many animals and people walk on the earth, and the earth doesn't complain. And similarly, the king would not complain. He was like a parent. But yet he was very strong too, like the sun. He was charitable. So many qualities that he would reveal through his activities would describe. And then, right at the end of the chapter, or close to the end of the chapter, it was described four specific activities, things that was predicted that he would do, that would that in the next chapter, in chapter 17, that we'll read today, Maitreya Muni, who's describing this pastime to Vidura, because Vidura asked about, there was a verse, if remember correctly, earlier on, after Dhruva Maharaj, at the end of the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, there was a verse that was said that Narada Muni glorified, or some verses that Narada Muni spoke in glorification of Dhruva Maharaj in the assembly of the Prachetas. So we're taking Maitreya Muni. So Vidura asked about that, about why was Narada Muni in the assembly of the Prachetas reciting these verses. So on the way to answering that question, the other descendants of Dhruva Maharaj are being described, and the first one that's being described in detail is Prithu Maharaj. So Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and Vidura asks, when he hears about Prithu Maharaj, and that he did these four wonderful things. He asked specifically about them. What are those four wonderful things? He chastised the earth, who was in the shape of a cow. And then he leveled the earth and made it more suitable for farming. And then he performed Ashwamedha Yagya, horse sacrifice, and Indra stole away the horse of the 100th sacrifice. And fourth, that he received instructions from Sanat Kumar. So we're going to hear, these were at the end of chapter 16, and in chapter 17, in verse 3, I believe, Badura is going to ask about these, questioning about these four. They have piqued his interest. He wants to hear about them. So the first verse in the 17th chapter, Maitreya Vacha, Maitreya Muni Se, Evamsa Bhagavan Vanya, Kyapito Gunakarma Bi, Chandayam Asatan Kamai, Pratipuja Abhinandhyacha. The great sage Maitreya continued, describing what had happened after the reciters, the glorifiers, spoke in praise of Maharaj Prithu. In this way, the reciters who were glorifying Maharaj Prithu readily described his qualities and chivalrous activities. At the end, Maharaj Prithu offered them various presentations with all due respect and worshipped them adequately. So he reciprocated with them. King Prithu thus satisfied and offered all respects to all the leaders of the brahmanas and other castes, to his servants, to his ministers, and to the priests, citizens, general countrymen, people from other communities, admirers, and others, and thus they all became happy. Then Vidura begins to speak after hearing this. He inquires from the great sage Maitreya, "My dear Brahmana, since Mother Earth can appear in different shapes, why did she take the shape of a cow?" Because that is one of the qualities of Earth, can appear in so many different shapes. So why did she specifically take the form of a cow? And when King Prithu milked her, who became the calf? And what was the milking pot? What was used to hold the milk? And who was, because especially in India, one sees this, that the cow will not give milk unless the calf is there, because the milk is an offering made to the mother, by the mother, to the calf out of great maternal affection. So unless the calf is there, the cow will not drop the milk into a milk bag. So what evoked the affection in the earth, in the shape of a cow? What was the calf that evoked her affection that allowed Prithu Maharaj to milk her and gain something from her? And what was the milking pot? What was it contained? What was the milk put into? Yes. The surface of the earth is by nature low in some places and high in others. How did King Prithu level the surface of the earth? And why did the king of heaven, Indra, steal the horse meant for the sacrifice? The great saintly king, Maharaj Prithu, received knowledge from Sanat Kumar, who was the greatest Vedic scholar. After receiving knowledge to be applied practically in his life, how did the saintly king attain his desired destination? What happened after? So Prabhupada in his purport to that verse explains that Sanat Kumar is a member of the four Kumaras, Chatshushana. The four Kumaras, they were the first sons of Brahma. So they were the oldest persons within the universe, other than Brahma himself. But yet they kept themselves, through their power, they kept themselves as young boys, because a young boy is not agitated in mind. And they wanted to be free from the desire to procreate, to have children. So they kept themselves as young boys. But yet they were the greatest of scholars, the greatest of jnanis, and they became the greatest of devotees. And they have their own sampradaya, or disciplic succession, from the four Kumaras. And there are four disciplic successions, starting from Lord Brahma, which is the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya is in that, from Lord Brahma. Then there's the Sri Sampradaya, which is Ramanuja Sampradaya, Lakshmi Devi. Then the Sampradaya coming from Lord Shiva, or the Rudra Sampradaya, and the Sampradaya coming from, or the disciplic succession, the community of devotees coming from the four Kumaras. So it is said in the Puranas, Padma Purana, I believe, that in Kali Yuga there are four Sampradayas. Unless one takes his initiation and gains his mantra in these Sampradayas, the mantra will not have any effect. So there are four bona fide Sampradayas in Kali Yuga. So Prithu Maharaj, Prabhupada explains in his purport, set the example by accepting a guru in one of the four Sampradayas. So these are the questions that were asked. And the fifth one is, what did Prithu Maharaj attain, and how did he get his destination, his ultimate, what happened to him at the end? So, Vidura continues. Prithu Maharaj was a powerful incarnation of Lord Krishna's potencies. Consequently, any narration concerning his activities is surely very pleasing to hear. And it produces all good fortune. Because Prithu Maharaj is the Lord, just hearing about him is pleasing to the heart. It is pleasing to hear about Krishna because it is transcendental and it is natural to hear about Krishna. And not only is it pleasing to the heart, but it also causes good fortune to the living entity. It causes his upliftment of consciousness. It is punya. It brings him good fortune. As far as I am concerned, Vidura says, I am always your devotee as well as a devotee of the Lord, who is known as Adhoktshaja. Please, therefore, he requests, but to request, to narrate all the stories, all the pastimes of King Prithu, who in the form of King Vena, the son of King Vena, milked the cow-shaped earth. So, Prithu Maharaj, again, he is a Shaktavesha avatar. He is empowered personality by Krishna. Krishna's Shakti enters into him. For what purpose? The purpose of ruling. Ruling properly so that everyone is materially, all the citizens are materially and spiritually satisfied, and the material supports the spiritual. Becoming materially satisfied in such a way that one's material life will not impinge on one's spiritual advancement. One's material life and one's spiritual life should run like the tracks of a train, parallel to each other, supportive. The material life should help the spiritual life go straight. But what happens if the tracks of a train go in opposite directions? If they start veering off from each other, the train will become derailed, obviously. So a material life should follow the direction of our spiritual life. And, of course, not the other way, that our spiritual life should be subservient to our material life. But we should live our material life in such a way that we make spiritual advancement. That is the idea. So, therefore, good rulership is so important. Because we're so dependent on our material situation. If our material situation isn't favorable, it derails our spiritual life. So therefore, Krishna's potency for ruling enters within this Prithu Maharaj. So important is the rule of the world. So when Vidura became inspired to hear of the activities of Lord Krishna and his various incarnations, Maitreya, also being inspired and being very pleased with Vidura, began to praise him. Then Maitreya spoke as follows. Prabhupada's short purport. Talk of Krishna Katha, or topics about Lord Krishna or his incarnations, is spiritually so inspiring that the receiver, that means those who, the reciter, those who are speaking, and those who hear are never exhausted. So what does it mean if we become exhausted when talking, or as soon as the Bhagavatam? Sometimes the joke is that Bhagavatam is the cure for insomnia. And there's one famous old story. This happened so many years ago, about Jayananda, a very wonderful devotee who left during Prabhupada's time, a very early devotee. So at one time, he used to work very, very hard, so hard. And one time in the morning, he was giving Bhagavatam class, and he fell asleep while he was giving Bhagavatam class. And then he woke up. He woke up and he saw that everyone else and all the devotees were also asleep. But yet, it is spiritually so inspiring, Krishna Kirtan. We've seen the example of Parikshit Maharaj, that he and the other sages didn't sleep for the entirety or eat or anything for the entirety of the 7 days that the Bhagavatam was spoken. They were so spiritually inspired. So the talk is so inspiring, so that the hearer and the speaker never become exhausted or tired. So what does it mean when we lose our energy? We're not getting our spiritual energy from hearing and speaking. It could mean that the speaker is not so qualified, and it could mean that the hearer is not so qualified, or both.
When the brain isn't capable.
But, in other words, the brain or the mind isn't on the spiritual platform. It's not so qualified at this point. It still has its material limitations. Yeah? So that's the idea. So to understand that we have material limitations is a very good step in removing those, because instead of justifying them, all we have to do is become humble and think, I'm not very qualified. That's the truth of it. And then, because if we don't say if we're the hearers, and we don't say, well, I'm not very qualified, then the only alternative is to say that the speaker is not qualified. If we're qualified, and the speaker might get very angry at you, even though it may be true. So really what we should do is we should see, oh, I'm not very qualified. And then we can make some advancement, understanding that we're not very qualified, that we're just like little spiritual babies. We're cutting our first teeth, learning how to walk. We should never think that we are great, powerful transcendentalists. Because if we think like that, Maya Devi, under the great inspiration of Krishna, will teach us a lesson to show us how tiny and insignificant we are. But yet, and how weak we are. But yet, we shouldn't be satisfied not being very qualified. Rather, what we should do is see that that not being qualified means that we're missing out. That's one thing. On the most wonderful things, and also it means that we have to suffer material life. So we should try to become more qualified. Trinadapi sinichena, that humility leads us to tolerance, and kirtaniya sadahari, always chanting Krishna's names. That ability only comes from very deeply being painfully aware of one's own debilities and lacks. We have lacks and lacks of lacks. You know what a lakh is in Indian counting? Do you know? Well, we could do one out of two things at this point. Huh?
100,000.
Yes. 1,000. I was going to suggest we could start guessing. But yeah, 100,000 is actually the answer. A lakh is 100,000. So we have lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of lakhs. So how much is a lakh?
100,000.
Yeah, pretty good. So Prabhupada explains, this is the nature of spiritual talks. We have actually seen that one can never become satiated by hearing the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. Both of them are devotees, and the more Vidura inquires, the more Maitreya is encouraged to speak. A symptom of spiritual talks is that no one feels tired. Thus, upon hearing the questions of Vidura, the great sage Maitreya did not feel disgusted, but rather felt encouraged to speak at greater length. Interesting. No one feels tired. It's a symptom of spiritual talks. The great sage Maitreya continued, text 9. My dear Vidura, at the time King Prita was enthroned by the great sages and brahmanas, and he was declared to be the protector of the citizens. There was a scarcity of food grains at that time. The citizens actually became skinny due to starvation. Therefore, they came before the king and informed him of their real situation. Because cruel King Vena, had stopped all the sacrifices, and because the sacrifices were stopped, the food grains weren't produced from the side of insufficient rain, and the earth wasn't producing the grains. So there was no grains, and the citizens couldn't eat properly, and they were weak, malnutrition set in, and they were skinny. Prabhupada explains in his purport about a third of the way down. In this narration, it is clearly indicated that the brahmanas, who used to control the royal power, when an evil king like Vena ruled, cruel, evil Vena, the brahmanas would kill him through their brahminical power and would select a proper ruler by testing his qualifications. In other words, the brahmanas, the intelligent men or great sages, would control the monarchical powers. Here we have an indication of how the brahmanas elected King Prithu to the throne as the protector of the citizens. The citizens, being skinny due to hunger, approached the king and informed him that necessary actions should be taken. The structure of the Vanashrama Dharma was so nice that the brahmanas would guide the head of state. The head of state would then give protection to the citizens. The kshatriyas would take charge of protecting the people in general. And under the protection of the kshatriyas, the vaishyas would protect the cows, produce food grains, and distribute them. Sudras, the working class, would help the higher three classes by manual labor. This is the perfect social system. So they complained to the king, the protector of the citizens, powerful, empowered, Prithu Maharaj, that we have no food. So what did the king do? Did he become very, very humble and say, preach to them, oh Prabhus, this is only God's grace, what to do? No. Just as a tree with a burning fire in the hollow of the trunk gradually dries up, the citizens said, we are drying up due to the fire of hunger in our stomachs. You are the protector of surrendered souls, and you have been appointed to give employment to us. Therefore, we have all come to you for protection. You are not only a king, but the incarnation of God as well. Indeed, you are the king of all kings. You can give us all kinds of occupational engagements, for you are the master of our livelihood. So this is one of the most important duties of a ruler, of a king, is to make sure that everyone is employed. They are following their occupational duty of work. This doesn't mean that everyone has to have a job. Jobs are recent creations since the industrial age. Employment doesn't mean job, because almost everyone should really be self-employed. It's much more healthy for the character. So this is ideal. Now it has come down to jobs. Working for someone, 9 to 5, etc. Which is better than not working, but it is still not ideal. It is not the Vedic standard. So these citizens, despite the fact that they were very eager to work, they could not work, and they could not obtain their food in that way. Therefore, they say, O King of all kings, please arrange to satisfy our hunger by the proper distribution of food grains. Please take care of us, lest we soon die for want of food. So the king's job is to make sure that everyone is employed or working according to their prescribed duties. If you're a Brahmin, then you have to be working as a Brahmin. If you're a Kshatriya, you have to be working as a Kshatriya. If you're a Vaishya, you must work as a Vaishya in a prescribed way. And as a Sudra, you have to work. So everyone, full employment. And that's the prime job, the prime duty, responsibility of the Kshatriya, to make sure everyone is performed in their occupational duty. And as a result of that, everyone should have an ample supply of the necessities of life. Even though people may live simply, but everyone should have shelter, food, etc., clothing. And if not, he is responsible to mitigate their distress. So after hearing this lamentation and seeing the pitiable condition of the citizens, King Prithu contemplated this matter for a long time to see if he could find out the underlying cause. So why was this occurring? Why were the citizens hungry? Why were they starving and skinny? So he reached his conclusion, and he took up his bow and his arrows, and he aimed his powerful bow and arrows at the earth, exactly like Lord Shiva, who destroys the whole world out of anger. And Prithu Maharaj was furious. He pointed his bow and arrows at the earth. Here's Prabhupada's purport. King Prithu found out the cause for the scarcity of food grains. He could understand that it was not the people's fault, for they were not lazy in executing their duties. Rather, the earth was not producing sufficient food grains. This indicates that the earth can produce sufficiently if everything is properly arranged. But sometimes the earth can refuse to produce food grains for various reasons. The theory that there is a scarcity of food grains due to an increase of population is not a very sound theory. There are other causes that enable the earth to produce profusely or stop producing. King Prithu found out the proper causes and took the necessary steps immediately. He saw that the earth was unwilling. So today, due to the lack of piety of the people, the earth is similarly not wishing to produce food grains. So what do the atheistic type people do? What do they do? Instead of acting in a pious way, which is Krishna's system to make the earth produce food grains, instead they use special fertilizers, petrochemical fertilizers. And what is the result?
Poison.
Yes. The earth will actually, it's just temporarily producing more, and the earth becomes poisoned and it loses its fertility. Because it's not Krishna's system. There's a Krishna system to do everything on the material level. But the people are atheistical. They don't want to follow Krishna's system. The people are proud. They think they can do it better. Why depend on God? Will depend on oil and chemical fertilizer. But where, of course, even in doing that, where does the oil come from? It comes from Krishna, ultimately. I think while I was in India, there was some a joke that came through on the internet about a talk between God and the scientists. The scientists were always challenging God, you don't exist. So God said, okay, let's have an experiment. Who can actually produce? So let's have a contest. we'll have a man-making contest because the scientists are saying we will be able to make man, and we can clone, we can do this and that. So God, of course, this is a Christian-oriented joke or a biblical-oriented joke. So God took a handful of earth, and from that earth, he made man. And then he looked at the scientists and said, "Now you go." So the scientist picked up some earth and he said, no, you make your own earth. That's my earth. I made that. So everything, that's the joke, by the way, that's the end of it. There's no more to it. So this, everything that the scientist uses to do better than God also comes from God. Let them start from nothing. Impossible. So Prithu Maharaj found out the proper cause, that the earth had stopped producing the food grains, and he decided to take steps immediately. So when the earth saw that King Prithu was taking his bow and arrows to kill her, she became very much afraid and began to tremble. She began to flee, exactly like a deer, which runs very swiftly when followed by a hunter. Being afraid of King Prithu, she took the shape of a cow and began to run. Prabhupada explains in his purport. In order to avoid the wrath of King Prithu, she took the shape of a cow. Since a cow is never to be killed, Mother Earth thought it wise to take the shape of a cow in order to avoid King Prithu's arrows. King Prithu, however, could understand this fact, and therefore he did not stop chasing the cow-shaped earth. So see, one thing that we should notice here is how determined King Prithu was to make sure that the citizens were fed properly, were cared for. And he found out the culprit was the earth, and immediately he was going to force the earth to act properly. And the earth, being very clever, took the form of a cow, because Prithu Maharaj had picked up his bow. He was ready to kill the earth. And of course, she thought, he would never, ever kill a cow. So she took the form of a cow. But Prithu Maharaj was still very heavy, dutiful, furious, actually, that she was withholding grains from the people. So seeing that she had taken the form of a cow, Maharaj Prithu became very angry. He became angrier. And his eyes became as red as the early morning sun. Placing an arrow on his bow, he chased the cow-shaped earth wherever she would run. The cow-shaped earth ran here and there and out of space between the heavenly planets and the earth, and wherever she ran, the king chased her with his bow and arrows. Just as a man cannot escape the cruel hands of death, the cow-shaped earth could not escape the hands of the sun and Vena. As at length the earth, fearful, her heart aggrieved, turned back in helplessness. So she did what instead of running, she saw her running would get her nowhere, wouldn't protect her. She turned to King Prithu himself and took shelter of him. Addressing the great opulent King Prithu as the knower of religious principles and as the shelter of the surrendered, she said, "Please save me. You are the protector of all living entities. Now you are situated as the king of this planet." So she knew that a Kshatriya would not kill even an enemy who takes shelter of him. So she took shelter of him. He was going to kill her, and she went and said, "Please, I am surrendered unto you. You are the proprietor of all living entities. You are the king. You protect all living entities. Well, I'm one of the living entities too. So you have to protect me. And I take shelter of you." Prabhupada's purport. The cow-shaped earth addressed King Prithu as Dharma Gya. What does Dharma Gya mean? Yeah, he knows Dharma, religiosity. which refers to one who knows the principles of religion. The principle of religion dictates that a woman, a cow, a child, a brahmana, and an old man must be given all protection by the king or anyone else. Consequently, Mother Earth took the shape of a cow. She was also a woman. Thus she appealed to the king as one who knows the principles of religion. Religious principles also dictate that one is not to be killed if he surrenders. She reminded King Prithu that not only was he an incarnation of God, but he was situated as the king of the earth as well. Therefore, his duty was to excuse her. The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor, and I have not committed any sinful activity. I do not know why you want to kill me. Since you're supposed to be the knower of religious principles, why are you so envious of me? And why are you so anxious to kill a woman? I'm innocent. I'm sinless. I'm a woman. I'm in the form of a cow. Why do you want to kill me? Even if a woman does commit some sinful activities, no one should place his hand upon her. What to speak of you, dear king, who are so merciful? You are a protector, and you are affectionate to the poor. The cow-shaped earth continued, my dear king, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. So if you take a boat, if you're on a boat, and you have the people of the earth on the boat, and everyone is on that boat, and someone destroys or kills the boat, what will happen to all the people that you're trying to protect? If you smash the boat, everyone will die. And if you smash the boat because the boat isn't giving proper protection to the people and the people die, what will be the gain? If you break me to pieces, she says, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drowning, from dying? Because the earth is situated above the Gobadak ocean. And if the earth is smashed to pieces, the predominating deity of the earth is killed, and then the earth will fall into the Gobadak ocean, and everyone will die. So King Prithu, she said, I'm sinless, I'm a woman, I'm innocent. Everyone will die if you kill me, please. I'm surrendering to you. So King Prithu replied to the earthly planet, my dear earth, you have disobeyed my orders and rulings. In the form of a demigod, you accepted your share of the yajñas we performed. We performed sacrifices and you accepted your share, but in return, you have not given anything. You have not produced the food grains that you're supposed to have produced. For this reason, because you have been so dishonest, you have taken half the business arrangement was to take the money, but you didn't supply the goods. Because of that dishonesty, and because you have disobeyed my orders and rulings, I must kill you. Purport. The cow-shaped earthly planet submitted that she not only was she a woman, but was innocent and sinless as well. But she argued that she should not be killed. Besides, she pointed out that being perfectly religious-minded, the king could not violate the religious principles that forbade killing a woman. In reply, Maharaj Prithu informed her that, first of all, she had disobeyed his orders. And that's actually the definition of religion. This is one of the most important points of the Bhagavatam, that it will come out gradually. And even in this canto, it begins, and then in the sixth canto, that religion means to follow the order of the Lord. That is called Bhagavat Dharma. That is what religion means, to follow the order of the Lord. And therefore, the opposite of being religious is being sinful. So therefore, sinfulness means acts against the order of the Lord. And therefore, the Vedic prime definition of sin is the non-performance of one's prescribed duty, that which is prescribed by the Vedas, by the Shastras, that which one is supposed to do by the Vedas and the Shastras, because the Vedas are produced from Krishna, they are empowered by Krishna, they are Krishna's orders. So therefore, non-compliance with Krishna is Krishna's desire, words is the definition of sin. So that's the first thing that Prabhupada explains, that you're not sinless. That Preeti Maharaj is telling her, you're not sinless because you're disobeying my orders. You're supposed to be producing food, grains, and you are not. That is sin. Maharaj Preeti informed her first she had disobeyed his orders. This was her first sinful activity. Secondly, he accused her of taking her share of the yajna sacrifices and not producing sufficient food grains in return. Although you are eating, text 23, you are eating grass every day, you are not filling your milk bag so we can utilize your milk. Since you are not willfully committing offenses, it cannot be said that you are not punishable. Since you are willfully committing offenses, you are consciously committing offenses, it cannot be said that you are not punishable due to your assuming the form of a cow. Purport. A cow eats green grasses in the pasture and fills her milk bags with sufficient milk so that the cow herdsman can milk her. Yajna sacrifices are performed to produce sufficient clouds that will pour water over the earth. The word paya can refer to both milk and water. As one of the demigods, the earthly planet was taking her share in the yajna. That is, she was eating green grass, but in return she was not producing sufficient food grains. That is, she was not filling her milk bag. Preeti Maharaj was therefore justified in threatening to punish her for her offense. He continued, you have lost your intelligence that despite my orders, you do not deliver the seeds of herbs and grains formerly created by Brahma and now hidden within you. Another short purport by Prabhupada. While creating all the planets in the universe, Lord Brahma also created the seeds of various grains, herbs, plants, and trees. When sufficient water falls from the clouds, the seeds fructify and produce food grains, vegetables, etc. By his example, Preeti Maharaj indicates that whenever there is a scarcity in food production, the head of the government should take steps to see why production is being held up and what should be done to rectify the situation. So that's the government's responsibility, to make first responsibilities, to make sure there's enough food for the people, practical responsibilities. Text 25. So you're not sinless, you are sinful. Now with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces, and with your flesh, satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens who are now crying for want of grains. Thus I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom. So heavy. He said, the citizens are starving because you're not producing grains, and I will kill you. I will cut up your body and I will feed them that body. And that way I'll satisfy them. So if you're not going to cooperate willingly to feed them, you'll still feed them by the power of my arrows. So very heavy. He was certainly not a pacifist king, because the rulers cannot be pacifists. Any cruel person, be he a man, woman, or impotent eunuch, who is only interested in his personal maintenance and has no compassion for other living entities, may be killed by the king. Such killing can never be considered actual killing. So this is very strong words. To act without compassion, to act selfishly in and of itself, if people just think of their own personal needs and their own personal maintenance. Selfish. They can be killed just by that. If someone is hoarding grains or something in the time of need and thinking, well, what's the problem? I earn them, they're mine. This selfishness is terrible. People are starving, and that's what we do. Then the king can say, kill him. Prabhupada's purport. The planet Earth is actually a woman in her constitutional form. And as such, she needs to be protected by the king. Prithu Maharaj argues, however, that if a citizen within the state, be he man, woman, or eunuch, is not compassionate upon his fellow men, he or she may be killed by the king, and such killing is never to be considered actual killing. As far as the field of spiritual activities is concerned, when a devotee is self-satisfied and does not preach the glories of Krishna, he is not considered a first-class devotee. A devotee who tries to preach, who has compassion upon innocent persons who have no knowledge of Krishna, is a superior devotee. In his prayer to the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj said that he was not personally interested in liberation from this material world. Rather, he did not wish to be liberated from this material condition until all fallen souls were delivered. Even in the material field, if a person is not interested in others' welfare, he should be considered to be an old incarnation like Prithu Maharaj. So we'll come back to that point, because that brings up a point that is so dear and important to Prabhupada, compassion and preaching. Importance of preaching, but we'll read the final verse first that we'll read tonight. So her last point was, she said, I'm sinless, I've done nothing wrong, I'm a woman. And Prithu Maharaj is explaining, yes, you may say these things, but you're going to be killed because you're withholding grain. But her final point was, if you kill me, everyone is going to die because I'm like the boat that's holding everyone afloat in the air. If you smash the boat, everyone will drown. So here is Prithu Maharaj's reply to that. You are very much puffed up with pride and have become almost insane. Presently, you have assumed the form of a cow by your mystic powers. Nonetheless, I shall cut you into small pieces like grain, and I will uphold the entire population by my personal mystic power. Purport. The earth informed King Prithu that if he destroyed her, he and the subjects would all fall down into the waters of the Garbha ocean. King Prithu now replies to that point. Although the earth assumed the shape of a cow by her mystic powers in order to be saved from being killed by the king was aware of this fact and would not hesitate to cut her to pieces, just like small bits of grain. As far as the destruction of the citizens is concerned, Maharaj Prithu maintained that he could uphold everyone by his own mystic powers. He did not need the help of the earthly planet. Being the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, Prithu Maharaj possessed the power of Shankarshan, which is explained by the scientists as the power of gravitation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is holding millions of planets in space without any support. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj would not have had any difficulty supporting all his citizens and himself in space without the help of the planet Earth. The Lord is known as Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic powers. Consequently, the planet Earth was informed by the king that she need not worry about his standing without her help. So he defeated all the arguments of the Earth. And there he was with his bow, arrows, and swords. So he's accused her of so many things, including lack of compassion. So Prabhupada, in the purport, in describing that, he described the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, which is in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. After his father Hiranyakashipu was killed, Lord Nrisimhadeva was very, very angry, and Prahlad offered prayers to satisfy him. And then Lord Nrisimhadeva offered Prahlad a benediction. And Prahlad Maharaj, he answers. He answers what he wanted from the Lord. My dear Nisringadev, Lord Nisringadev, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. Here is Prabhupada's purport. This is the decision of the Vaishnava, the pure devotee of the Lord. For himself, he has no problems, even if he has to stay in this material world, because his only business is to remain in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious person can even go to hell and still be happy. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj has said, Namo Dvijay Paraduratyaya Vaitaranya, O best of all great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. The pure devotee is never unhappy in any condition of life. This is confirmed in the Bhagavatam. Narayana paraksva save nakutastana bibhyati svagapavagana rakeshu apitoyata darshana. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. For a devotee, being situated in the heavenly planets and being in the hellish planets are equal. For a devotee, he lives neither in heaven nor in hell, but with Krishna in the spiritual world. The secret of success for the devotee is not understood by the karmis and jnanis. Karmis therefore try to be happy by material adjustment, and jnanis want to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme. The devotee has no such interest. He is not interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest. Rather, his interest is in the busiest part of the world, where he teaches people Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement was started for this purpose. We do not teach one to meditate in a secluded place just so that one may show that he has become very much advanced and may be proud of his so-called transcendental meditation, although he engages in all sorts of foolish materialistic activity. A Vaishnava like Prahlad Maharaj is not interested in such a bluff of spiritual advancement. Rather, he is interested in enlightening people in Krishna consciousness because that is the only way for them to become happy. Prahlad Maharaj says clearly, Nanyam Tvarasya Saranam Brahmato Anupashye. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. One wanders within the universe, life after life. But by the grace of a devotee, a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can get the clue to Krishna consciousness, and then not only become happy in this world, but also return home, back to Godhead. That is the real target of life, in life. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement are not at all interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest, where one will only make a show of meditation, nor are they interested in opening many schools for yoga and meditation in the cities. Rather, every member of the Krishna consciousness movement is interested in going door to door to try to convince people about the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be fully convinced that without Krishna one cannot be happy. Thus, the Krishna-conscious person avoids all kinds of pseudo-spiritualists, transcendentalists, meditators, monists, philosophers, and philanthropists. The end of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yep, go ahead.
In geography, we learned that one third of the Earth's arable land is affected by desertification.
Yes.
It's becoming unviable because it's either because salt rises or because there's not enough rainfall.
Yes.
So, also, people sometimes.
That's a comment. That's a comment.
It's a comment,
yes. Yes.
And there's a question added onto that. But it seems that.
And the deserts are growing, too.
Yes. Yeah, one third of the arable, one third of land that used to be arable.
Oh, I see.
Is now affected by that.
And also all the systems that the modern society uses to solve the problems, they're not the most pious systems, so therefore they cause worse problems later on. So the groundwater is lessening because of that, and also the pumping all the water out of the earth causes an increase of salinity as well.
It seems in the Western world, in the developed world, where there's little if any sacrifice, there's plenty. Whereas in the underdeveloped world, so-called underdeveloped world, where people are generally a little more pious or religious, cultured anyway, they're the ones that are suffering the deprivation.
Yeah.
So it seems a little difficult to understand in light of what we heard about.
Yeah. My understanding is that it's like living off your bank balance. You've accumulated some piety, and you see this in the Western countries that are most opulent. They're relatively pious, or they were relatively pious and religious. In the United States, there are so many churches. It's actually quite incredible how many churches and religious organizations there are. So due to the previous piety, there is success. But when one is living off one's bank balance, one's previous piety, it's just a matter of time before it runs out. And when it runs out, it's going to be awful. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll stop then, and tomorrow we'll continue with this chapter, chapter 17, hearing about Maharaj Prithu's dealings with the earth and his great determination to provide food and protection for those under his care, the citizens. Maharaj Prithu ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.